A lot of our work is driven by the vision of the local church. Even in our new churches, we rarely, as a conference, decide, hey, we're going to plant a church here, and so we send a pastor and we get it going. Most of our church plants have come from the vision, the passion, the excitement of a church planter, a planting pastor, or a planting team who see the need for a new kind of ministry to reach a new kind of people in this place.
Welcome to Mindful Leader, a podcast on leadership. I am your host, Dennis Shaw. I am a retired elder in the Mountain Sky Conference of the United Methodist Church, and we're going to use this vehicle to share a little bit about what's going on in some leadership elements, initially of the Mountain Sky Conference, and eventually we'll grow out from there.
Our guest today is Jeff Rainwater. Jeff is currently the Mountain Sky Conference Superintendent for Congregational and Community Vitality. He didn't start off that way. He started off to be an aerospace engineer. I have a grandson who is about 9 years old, 8 years old, and I'm pretty sure he's going to be an engineer because he's constantly tinkering with things. He wants to understand why and how it works. And Jeff is exactly one of those kinds of people. He likes to look at systems and any system that he approaches and ask how can he perhaps make it better. But that having been said, ministry in the United Methodist Church is Jeff's passion, and it's been his single profession. He's led churches in Arkansas, Colorado, and Wyoming. And before he was appointed to being the superintendent for Congregational Community Vitality, Jeff was the Wyoming district superintendent. And in that role, towards the end of that time in that role, he was the dean of the cabinet. For the last 3 years, he has sought to try to help establish churches, become healthier, and to support the birth of new faith congregations, faith communities, other worlds that he's tries to examine a little bit. And one of those is Star Wars, Harry Potter. He and I share a joint passion for Tolkien, J.R.R. Tolkien. And he acknowledges that there is a strange world called Duke basketball. During the basketball season, Jeff and I will exchange regularly text messages about what's going on. Jeff currently lives in Denver with his wife, Laura, who is the senior pastor at Parker United Methodist Church. They have a wonderfully artistic daughter, Emma, and they have a princess dog. I think, is it Kezi? Is that how you pronounce the dog's name? Kezi?
That is it, Kezi.
Kezi. But Jeff is transitioning. Jeff is stepping down from his role on the conference as superintendent for Congregational Community Vitality. And he's going to be the new lead pastor at Hope United Methodist in Greenwood Village, Colorado. So welcome to Mindful Leadership, Jeff. And thank you for having accepted my invitation to be here.
Thank you, Dennis. It's a joy to be with you.
Jeff, tell me a little bit. I mean, traditional structure of conferences don't always necessarily include somebody with the title specifically of yours, although they may have that idea that's performed. Tell me a little bit about what it is that you're doing in your current leadership role on the conference, if you don't mind.
Certainly. For some that are familiar with other conference structures, I am often considered the congregational developer for our conference, which means I help provide vitality resources to local churches that are already established, whether that's information, sometimes resources in the form of grants through other leaders. Sometimes it's in-house stuff we've created, like teaching tools on right-sizing budgets or church size theory. Or often, most often, it's about connecting leaders in our churches with leaders and thinkers and entrepreneurs and developers across our connection. Title superintendent came in the union to form Mountain Sky because for us, it was important to have the congregational developer and the leadership developer both be members not just of the extended cabinet, but the appointive cabinet. So we meet, Annie and I meet always with the cabinet when they meet and are a part of their full deliberations at all times.
And the Annie you're talking about is Annie Arnoldy. If we look in the Book of Discipline, there is a position called the Director of Connectional Ministry. And Annie performs that function, but that's not her title. She has a different title, if I'm right. She has additional things that are on there.
Yes, she is the Superintendent of Leadership Development and the Director of Connectional Ministry presently. And so she's a similar conference superintendent to my position, in addition to being the DCF or the Director of Connectional Ministry.
Now, as I think I understand it from having seen the conference news go by, there is going to be some things that are transitioning. So sort of as you laid out your title and what you're doing right now, there is a change in the offing. You're going to be on 1 July at Hope United Methodist. And on 1 July, there's going to be a little different structure, particularly as it relates to conference vitality. Can you talk a little bit to that?
Sure. Yes, what we're going to do is we're going to sort of shift responsibilities. There will still be two conference superintendents. Annie Arnoldy will become the Superintendent of Vitality and Director of Connectional Ministries. So in many ways, she's going to take on much of my portfolio of responsibilities, in addition to what she's been doing as the Director of Connectional Ministries, which is connecting different parts of our conference with the wider church. Mm-hmm. And also sort of leading annual conference, doing many things like that. Betty Wynn, who has been on my staff, as will be elevated to a superintendent position, going to be overseeing community engagement, beloved community. I know that's part of her title. So the conference's anti-racism work, the conference's work with our ethnic congregations, our clergy of color, all of that kind of work is going to be hers. It has been hers, but now we're elevating her position to the level of cabinet because we think that work is so important. And we think her voice and her responsibilities needs to be heard within the cabinet every time they meet and to have that kind of authority. And so that's sort of the shift. We're a lot of the same responsibilities will be covered, in some sense by some of the same people. We're just sort of moving around the pieces a bit.
And I want to emphasize that, in my time as a financial manager for the Mountain Sky Conference and before that, the Legacy Rocky Mountain, sometimes when people see these kinds of shifts occurring, they assume that these are brand new positions that we're funding out of brand new money. And that's exactly not what is happening here. The moving around here is from a financial perspective, is a zero sum game. We are reallocating titles and responsibilities, but it is of no additional cost to the conference. So for those that want to automatically assume we're increasing the size of the conference staff, that is not accurate. Jeff, there are committees, conference committees of other volunteers that assist you in this role. Is there one or two that you want to particularly address here and tell us what they do and how they help you?
Absolutely. Really two committees on the conference level that I am a part of their work in many ways. The first is Congregational Vitality Committee, and it is the committee that oversees the funds that we have, both for grants for established congregations, for revitalization, for new ministries within that church, and the like. They also oversee a significant amount of money for the birth of new faith communities across our conference, and help oversee that work as well. They not only implement the grants receive applications, consider the merit of those applications, interview the project teams and all of that, and then decide on what money to spend. But we also try to come alongside those projects on an ongoing basis, and they help me sort of evaluate how the projects are going. We talk about new initiatives that we might be able to create to help establish congregations or to help new congregations, either way. So it's a really great team that I'm lucky to be a part of. And then there's the Community Engagement Committee, which is over a lot of different program responsibilities and different groups within the conference. So all of our social justice work, all of our work with our ethnic congregations, all of sort of the missions work. Janet Mulroy is on the conference staff for missions. She's part of community engagement. And so Community Engagement Committee sort of collected all of those disparate committees for those different kind of areas under one umbrella at the time that Mountain Sky was formed. And I'm also a part of that committee, although I do, Betty Wynn and Janet Mulroy take the lead primarily as staff with those committees, but I'm also a part of that committee as well.
And there is volunteer leadership that participates in both of those. Am I correct on that? And if I am correct, who is that volunteer leadership?
Bryson Lilly is the chair of the Congregational Vitality Committee, and we have laity and clergy from across the conference on that committee. We try to have representatives from each district as a part of that committee. Community engagement, Melissa Martin from Cheyenne, Wyoming, has been the chair of that committee, and I think is continuing for another year, though we may be looking for a co-chair. And similarly, representatives, both laity and clergy from across the conference.
But like, and for those who might have listened to the first two episodes, where Angela works very closely with Bruce, and then Bruce Berger as the president of the Council of Finance Administration, plus trustees, who has a chair, plus the Board of Pension and Health Benefits, Jeff has the same thing going on, where there are activities, there are committees that work with him, but they are not conference staff by and large. They are composed of other volunteers that help facilitate and manage and take care of some of the details of how this is all done. So Jeff mentioned resources. Jeff, you mentioned resources. I as a bit of a geek myself on the issue of money, where money comes from and where it goes, I think a lot of people would be surprised to discover that this investment that you make in ministry does not all come from the budget. Where does it come from? I mean, it's more than the budget. So where does it come from?
We spend, Congregational Vitality, for example, spends probably twice what we are allocated in the annual budget. And a lot of that money goes to the support of new churches, because paying full-time or part-time clergy or staff is expensive. So we found we need to invest greater than what is allowed for in the budget. So a lot of money comes from various designated funds that have been collected, some in excess of 20 years or more, but that have been collected through various sources for the use of starting new ministries or helping churches revitalize or establish ministries. A big portion of that money, what we've in the past called the Legacy Fund, comes from the sale of closed church properties. So if a church closes, the property of that church returns to the ownership of the annual conference. And then the Congregational Vitality Committee, my position, and especially the trustees who make the final decision, decide whether we're going to keep that property and redevelop it for a new ministry, or whether it's time to just liquidate that property and use those funds from the sale of that property for new ministries. And so a good portion of what we have comes from that transaction. But other money is given by, I you know, some is have been given by individual donors that have supported the conference and its mission through the years and wanted to see new churches or other new ministries form, and so gave designated funds, contributions for those sort of things. So we have somewhere between $2 or $3 million that we draw from and have been for the last few years and will continue to do so to fund new ministries and new churches at a level that, that we can support to try to birth new congregations.
And there's a third pile that I will want to talk about in a second, but the I want to, on the issue of reinvestment, so a church closes and the conference makes a decision to take that church and sell it, dispose of the property, and then move on. But there's a catch, I think, in the Book of Disciplines. There used to be a catch that was, I thought, is so that if the church closed, and I'm going to use the term rural, it's not, the term is not rural inside the Book of Discipline, but if the church is from a smaller community, the investment from that church's closing must be in a like size, a like community. So sort of rural for rural. Is that, am I, I'm probably doing a bad job explaining it, but am I correct about that?
It's actually the exact opposite.
Okay. Yeah, there we go.
What the discipline puts a restriction on is if a church is closed from an urban center and there is a U.S. Census actual list of urban centers that the discipline, most folks don't realize this, but that is what the discipline is referencing. So, but it's generally, an urban center is generally a population of above 60,000. If it comes from an urban center, the money has to be used for churches in urban centers. And the idea from this historically was they wanted to avoid, in some sense, gentrification. They Yes. wanted to avoid selling inner city churches and then using that money to build churches, you know, out in the suburbs. Demographics have changed, so it doesn't always work out that way anymore, but that is a restriction in the discipline, and so we follow that. And we have a separate accounting of mm-hmm. churches sold in urban centers, and we draw money from those only for new churches or new projects in urban centers, and then churches sold anywhere else is a general fund that can be used anywhere.
I think as I was saying it through, talking through, I was thinking to myself, no, Dennis, you got this backwards. It's the other way around. Yeah, I'm glad you got me straightened out there on that. And I know that's probably one of the things that needs to be understood a little bit better by all of us as to how that all seems to work. In my dealings as a volunteer to the conference, I know that on multiple occasions we really try to get the phrase going that the conference is here to serve the local church. I will say to you sometimes that can be very challenging to do, because I think the natural hierarchical mindset is that we can easily get ourselves into a flawed mentality, which is the fact that the church, local church, is here to serve the conference. Of course, I said it was flawed. I don't agree with that, but it's easy to find ourselves slipping into that. Where do you think with the resourcing the focus is almost your entire focus, but where do you think that you would like to lay claim to where you've done this the best and how you've gone about supporting the local church?
Well, I think our granting program is certainly one where we try to invest in local churches, and the understanding is we are investing in them. We are providing funding for initiatives that they seek out, especially in our conference. A lot of our work is driven by the vision of the local church. For example, even in our new churches, we rarely, as a conference, decide, hey, we're going to plant a church here, and so we send a pastor and we get it going, right? And that being a conference or a district decision. Most of our church plants have come from the vision, the passion, the excitement of a church planter, a planting pastor, or a planting team who see the need for a new kind of ministry to reach a new kind of people in this place. And then they start the work on that. And we, instead of saying, here, go do this, we come alongside them and say, how can we help? So that's one example for my work. Another example that we've been doing for the past 3 years is we work with an organization called Ministry Incubators on what we call as the Hatchathon process. And it's a similar to starting a new church, but can be any kind of new ministry within the church. And basically, we invite people who have sort of an entrepreneurial leading, have an idea for a ministry, and we provide for them a process where they can develop that idea first into a clear and compelling pitch, a vision statement, but really more than a vision statement, a clear and compelling statement of this ministry. We give them the tools to start forming the plan and the design for that ministry. And then for a year, we give them coaching with entrepreneurial-leaning coaches from Ministry Incubators. We gather them in meetings quarterly for cohort support with each other, teaching some best practices and the like. We even have a second retreat about 6 months into this process to allow them to sort of retool their idea. Talk with the other leaders about any changes that need to be made. Again, some more teaching. And then they finish the year with coaching. And for the last 3 years, we have at least done it this way, that other than the investment of time, which is their investment, the investment of coming to these events, which is their investment, we have invested in them completely. We haven't asked them for a dime. Because I believe that this is our conference's investment in entrepreneurial leaders and new ministries within our established congregations and within leaders who may start new congregations. And so it's a way for us to use what we have to help support the ministries that they see are needed in their community and that they're passionate about.
And if a person listens to this podcast and goes, wow, I'd like to get a run at that. Who would they contact? Because you're transitioning out. Would this go to Annie or is this going to go to Betty?
This would go to Annie. Okay. So if anyone is interested in the Hatchathon, they should talk to Annie Arnoldy.
Okay. And I will, in the show notes, put Annie's email address down there for that. And I know that Jeff is going to sort of take a little bit of sabbatical in June. So is it fair to say that fairly soon, even though it's 1 July is the official date, that people could send a note to Annie as early as next week if they wanted to?
Yes. Okay. I think now would be the time to start dropping things to Annie on this sort of matter. Okay. You know, she's not fully into it yet, so be patient with her because she's trying to do two jobs.
Patience is a gift of the spirit, I think. Right?
We get two. Yeah. But she will be the one.
We forget that sometimes. So we do. I will want to come back to a table for all in a second. But where has been serving the local church been the most difficult? I mean, going back to my question, which is, it's easy for us to get into the I'm a mindset of the fact that the objective is the conference is here to support the local church. Sometimes the default becomes the local church is here to support the conference, which I think is flawed. How has been serving the local church been the most challenging, the most difficult? How would you might want to describe that for everybody to know something about?
Emotionally, I have seen a loss of trust across the connection that has even deepened between like pastor and congregation in the midst of such tremendous change. I don't think we can underestimate the emotional impact of COVID and the pandemic on our pastoral leaders, but even on our laity leaders trying to keep churches going in this time. When all sense of rhythm, all sense of routine, all sense of, you know, how we used to do things was lost for such a period. And I think the emotional impact of that is still happening alongside the polarization that we see in our country is just straining relationships. There over 60, I think over 50% of adults in the past 3 years have described experiencing significant, sometimes even debilitating loneliness, that are just our social network of relationships has been breaking down in some sense. We shrunk in the relationships we have. I think that emotional impact has just been a great weight for our leaders in the midst of other very traumatic times. I mean, yeah. Disaffiliations and the struggle of some churches who are making those decisions, and it's not just a parting ways of church from church, it's a parting of ways within the church. Yeah. That in the midst of what we've all felt, you know, has been, you know, in some sense a 50-year, 60-year decline of the denomination, where we feel like we have less power to change the outcome and our future because of our decline in the midst of these very traumatic, discontinuous jolts to the system that just seem to be one after the other. It's a challenging time to be a pastor or to be a leader within a congregation right now. It's very difficult for, I think, everyone.
I was lucky enough to retire in 2019, and people that are that I still talk to, that these 4 years has really been very stress-filled. COVID, Boy Scout bankruptcy, disaffiliation, the continuing impact of General Conference 2019, and then the not having General Conference in 2020 has just accumulated. Just accumulated and accumulated. I like your imagery of the fact that trust has broken down. I think it's one way to understand it, for sure. I know that you have been asked by Bishop Caron, along with Nancy Flint, who's one of the three co-lay leaders of the conference, to lead something that's called the Connectional Task Force. I think I have the right name for that. And I think I've been told that you're going to continue to probably lead that as a clergy person at Hope United Methodist. You want to talk a little bit about what that's all about? Why do we need a task force and what's going on with that?
Sure. I think, well, we've just spoken a bit about the stress of all these changes, often traumatic changes to our local churches. Well, the fact is those same stresses, those same traumatic events have, I think, eroded not just the health of our individual selves as local churches, not even as individual selves as leaders, or within those churches, but has eroded the health of the connection itself. That you may define, not just by institutional means in talking about, talking about the conference as an organization, but we are a network of relationships, church to church, pastor to pastor, district superintendent to church, conference leader to church. You know, we are a web of relationships that define who we are as a conference and as a denomination. And I think those very relationships have been strained and stressed, not just in recent years, but over time as well. And so the committee is gathering. It's a representative group from across the conference. We have members from every district. We have laity members, clergy members. And we're trying to see, you know, what are small ways that, or big ways, that we can recommend changes to leaders within the conference and perhaps even churches themselves, on ways of rebuilding, reconstituting those relationships in a healthy way so that we're stronger together. I believe we're stronger together than we are apart. That's part of why I'm United Methodist and have always been so. But we're facing some challenges that is testing those relationships. And so what can we look at to see, you know, what might we do differently now, given the stresses we're facing? What practices need to change? Or in some sense, what values do we hold that we're just not living into very well, right? We have some values as a conference: transparency, accountability, collaboration, to name three, right? So what are ways where our practices don't meet those values, or where we may even have a practice that we just don't follow very well? We're starting off small. We've had a lot of interviews with people from across the conference to hear, you know, some of the hurt. And there's some significant hurt, I will say, out there in our connection, to hear the needs. You know, what I hear is people really want relationship. They want those connections, but they want them in a healthy way, both vertically in our system and horizontally. So it's ongoing work. It's work that we will not accomplish on our own. The task force is meant to be in conversation and partnership with other leaders and groups within the conference, the cabinet, CFNA, the Mountain Sky Roundtable, any group really, we're just sort of a lens right now, trying to bring into focus what we see as the strengths of our connection, but also what we see as the hurts of our connection and the needs of our connection in this moment, to start a conversation that I hope will go well beyond this team. And indeed, the work will go well beyond this team to sort of address some of those hurts, because our system of relationships has been so strained and broken through many things through the years.
One of my favorite books is by an author named John Cotter, and it's a secular book, and he talks in there about leading change. And one of the early elements, is either the first or second step in leading change, is that it does require some level of urgency that there needs to be a change. And my own observation has been over time that one person's urgency can be another person's anxiety. And how you try to convert that anxiety into a state of seeing that there's some urgency here, but trying to reduce the anxiety at the same time can be quite challenging. It can be very, very challenging. So, I promised that we would come back to the topic of a table for all. We were talking about the funding that you had. I'm going to leave it here in this place in the podcast so that our conversation has been linear. But I want to double back just a second, if you don't mind, to funding, because you have laid out a strategy that is going to live past you as the in your superintendent role, called A Table for All. And I personally am a contributor to that. Why don't you tell people what A Table for All is, in case that the information flow hasn't made it down to them, what's going on with that?
Certainly. A Table for All is another response to the trauma, I'll just name it, the trauma that we have experienced as congregations and as a connection. Shortly after General Conference 2019, many leaders within the conference realized that we were heading towards a parting of ways. We were not quite sure what that was going to look like, but that we were heading towards a parting of ways. And we knew that congregations, that this would be a parting of ways, not only between congregations, that some congregations may go, but other congregations would stay, but that within congregations there would be a parting of ways that would put churches in peril, because they would experience very much sudden loss, a lot of emotional trauma with that work, etc. Then, of course, everything else happened, and we had a lot of trauma, so we kind of generalized the approach, but the idea is to support a group of congregations through a process of addressing their grief, addressing their loss, but in the midst of that, also understanding the gifts that remain, the strengths that remain within their congregation, helping them sort of assess their new normal, you know, who are they now after this loss? And then helping them start working towards a future with promise. And for me, that future with promise lies in one verse in the Bible, Jeremiah 29:7, where a people are in exile. The people of Israel are in exile. They're in Babylon. They've lost so much. And they're wondering if they're going to survive as a people. And in the midst of that, God promises them through Jeremiah's words that they do have a hope-filled future. But then in just a few verses before, in 29:7, he says, pray for the welfare of your city. Right? Pray for the welfare of your city, for in their welfare you will find your own. And so our understanding, and the understanding of much of my work, has been, how do we create neighbor-centered ministries? How do we find our center not in our church or in our church building, but we find our center among our neighbors, blessing them, and in that blessing, they're going to bless us? And so this process is a process of sort of discerning all of those things and working towards some ministry experiments through the hatchathon process that I just spoke of.
Yeah.
Because one thing that many of us in this work realize is new church work really isn't separate from established church work. It's the same lessons are needed in both, you know. And there was another developer, I can't remember his name, but I heard recently someone said, you know, post-COVID, post-disaffiliation, post all this mess, every church is a new church today. We all have a new normal.
I have been asking people what I call my actor's studio question. Now, the actor's studio, the host of that particular show, had 10 questions he would ask everybody every time they would have the show. I think it was weekly. I don't have 10. I only have one. And this will be the question until it's not the question. And I'm talking specifically now about your superintendency role around vitality for the congregations and the community. But what do you wish that you had known when you took on that position 3 years ago that you would like to share and how you would like to understand that? So what is it you wish you had known 3 years ago that would have helped you in how you led for the last 3 years?
Mm-hmm. I came in the middle of I started this role in the middle of COVID. So it has shaped a lot of what I've done. And I think I wish I would have been more focused on the work of digital ministry and have had a better understanding of the impact that is still having in the new normal of who we are. So we struggled all to find those new means of communicating and connecting with each other. And I think we could have, as a conference, done a little better job. I could have done a little better job of providing a better, not just more information, but a better sort of organized system to help churches do that. So that's one on kind of a technical basis and a knowledge basis. But on an emotional basis, I wish I would have known back then the true emotional impact on leaders that we are in some sense only seeing in probably in the past 12 months following COVID, the complete exhaustion of some of our leaders, the lack of trust that we've spoken of, the sense of isolation that we've spoken of. I wish, I don't know there's any way we could have known, but if we could have prepared our leaders a little better for just that trial, don't know what the outcome would have been, but that is certainly something that I would have been very interested in having a future picture of how deeply this has affected us all, I think.
My closing has been consistently, I've done this twice now, this is the third one. Was there anything that I should have asked that I didn't ask that you'd like to have me ask now? And those fine.
I think I am good.
Okay.
Looking forward to my transition. And so I'm sort of wrapping up things and think we've got a chance to share some good stuff. So thank you.
I imagine you are wrapping up things. And I know you're probably looking forward to getting back to a different cycle there at the local church. And my experience with Hope has always been very positive. So I look forward to hearing about the fruitfulness that you'll experience there. So God bless you. Thank you for taking your time today on this Friday. A lot of people have Sabbaths on Fridays when I record these, but I appreciate you having done this. And so thank you for your time today. My guest next week, my guest next time around will be Al Strauss. Al Strauss is on the trustees. He's the new chair of responsible stewardship. I'm going to interview him on June the 1st, 2023. So if you're listening to this after June the 1st, 2023, don't send me a note. Say, ask Al Strauss this. But if you've got any thoughts that you think that you'd like to have me ask Al about, don't hesitate to drop me an email note at my email address that's going to be shown in the show notes, the notes about this particular podcast that you can see. Sometimes there's an I on your podcast reader, listener, and it'll show information, but it's the notes about the show, not the show itself. And we'll go from there. I want to say thank you to everybody for having listened, and don't hesitate to give me feedback. And again, my email address will be in the show notes. Send me a note, let me know what you think. And I look forward to continuing to share with you about mindful leadership and authenticity and empathy, and how it is to go about looking at yourself and examining where you might be going. So thank you for your time today. And Jeff, again, thank you very much for having been my guest. So peace be with all of you, and peace be with you, Jeff. Thank you very much.